rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello, I'm Gab Marcotti, and I'm speaking to you from Warsaw with the latest game podcast from Euro 2012. Half the sides are now home, and amazingly, guess what? England are still here. So much for the nattering nabobs of negativity, eh? How, why, and what next? Well, I'm joined by two men in the England camp, Ollie Kay and Matt Hughes, and they're going to help me figure this out. Ollie, England are top of the group. Easy question for you. What's more impressive, their results or their performances?
I think it's the results are more impressive. I mean, to get 7 points from three games and three difficult games is impressive. I think you look at the performances and technically they've left something to be desired at times, but in terms of their sort of attitude and organisation for the most part and their application and effort, which are all things that they've been accused of lacking over the years, I think they've been spot on. So maybe in terms of quality they wouldn't be top of the class, but in terms of application and effort they've been great.
Matt, do you agree with the assessment that those were three difficult games, and do you agree with the assessment that they've lacked effort and application in the past?
I don't think they were two particularly difficult games, and certainly not the most difficult that teams have had in this tournament. If you look at Group B and C, I think England would not have won either of those groups and may have struggled to qualify, to be honest. I think they were fortunate to get France first up and they were pretty nervous and hesitant. They made hard work of beating an average Sweden team and were, again, a bit fortunate to beat Ukraine last night, who did actually play quite well. The results, as Ollie says, have been better, but there have been elements of performances that have been excellent. They've defended largely very, very well, and Steven Gerrard has performed as a true captain and leader, maybe not in the most dynamic attacking sense that he would prefer, but he's really shown the maturity to adapt his game to be a sort of defensive bulwark, really. He's done very well.
Meanwhile, that Wayne Rooney guy came back into the lineup. It's not always easy when, even though you're arguably England's best player, but you come back into a side that's enjoyed some success without you. Ollie, was he a bit rusty? Is there more to come? How would you assess his contribution? And was Roy right in bringing him straight back into the side?
Well, I certainly would think he was right in bringing him back. I mean, it's not necessarily the goal that indicates that. I think it's just the fact that you've got a player who is a top-class player, and the guys who would otherwise have kept him out are guys who perhaps exceeded expectations in both scoring against and against Sweden. So I think it was an obvious thing to bring him back. But he was rusty. His first half performance was a bit stodgy at times, and he came out with a quote on Monday where he said, or on Sunday where he said about the need to sort of feel his way slowly back into the game, and that wasn't really an opportunity he had in the end, because he saw so little of the ball in the first half. But, the chance to sort of play his way back in like a batsman preparing for a long stint at the crease, that didn't really arise. So I think it was understandable that he was rusty, but he should, in theory, get better with every game he plays. Just depends how many games England have got ahead, doesn't it?
Matt, Milner and Young are two guys who, from what I've seen on TV, and obviously I'm not in the ground, I thought, they kind of did their part. I don't think either one is an outstanding player and provides much added value, but they kind of do their job as cogs in the machine. Whereas I think somebody like Theo Walcott does give you something different. Can Milner and Young improve, especially with Gerrard sitting so deep? You wonder if there's a concern that the front men might be isolated, or is it kind of a moot point because he's going to look to play Walcott from the start?
I think Young can improve, and Milner has to improve if he's going to keep his place in the side. Whether he can or not is a different matter. I thought Young had his best game last night. He's a frustrating player. He doesn't get involved as much. He doesn't hunt the ball, but he does produce moments of quality, such as the cross for the header that was missed by Rooney and another good cross in the second half. So I think he will keep his place because he offers something different, and they haven't got too many players who can produce good crosses other than Gerrard. Milner, I was disappointed by, really. He looks a bit tired. Didn't really give much in attack or defence, and it's probably only the lack of alternatives and Hodgson's reluctance to play Walcott and Young and the vulnerability of Johnson at right back that's keeping Milner in the side. He can get better. I think he'll benefit from an extra day's rest, which England have got from winning the group, because he did look pretty exhausted and on balance probably expecting to keep his place.
Now, we had a goal line incident in that game, and as it turned out, an incorrect decision, although probably an irrelevant one because there was also an offside on that very play, so it's not like it had a massive outcome on the game. And Sepp Blatter helpfully tweeted this morning that goal line technology is now necessary and so on. It kind of makes you wonder what took him so long to change his mind. Ollie, I was at the meeting with the referees boss today here in Warsaw, and they kind of got the sense that, or they came out with a message, look, goal line technology, that's something for FIFA to decide, but they made the point that this goal line incident that was missed by the additional assistant referee was pretty tight, but it was a mistake, but it was the first mistake they've made, and that there were two other goal line incidents in this tournament that they got right. I'm assuming your stance on goal line technology hasn't changed.
Come over there.
You tell me. I'm purposely asking you this because you've sat on the fence on this one.
No, well, I think the additional assistants could and should be able to work. I mean, it's a sort of slightly unwieldy way of doing it, and I think they can look rather superfluous. But I think a guy who's standing sort of 2 meters away, 3 meters away, just the other side of the post, should in the vast majority of cases be able to spot an incident like the one last night. I thought from the angle that he would have seen it, I think it should have been very clear that it crossed the line. So I think that's a pretty exceptional miss by the goal line assistant. But as such, it might not be the one that proves that technology is a necessity, as Blatter says. But it's I would say that technology should be seen as a last resort, but maybe we're at a stage now where it has become a necessary last resort because there have been these incidents time and time again. But I think, as you say, the offside aspect of that incident, I mean, it shows that it's not exactly foolproof. You solve goal line technology and it you open up cans of worms elsewhere. I don't think it's quite as simple as an irresistible case for technology.
Matt, you've heard Ollie Kay's very decisive yes or no answer. If you could flick a switch and introduce goal line technology tomorrow, would you do it?
I absolutely would. And for once, I couldn't disagree with Ollie Moore. I just do not understand the argument against it. Technology has improved the experience and the officiating of so many other sports, cricket, rugby league, rugby union, going back 10 or 15 years, and it could clearly do so for football. It wouldn't solve all problems, but the failure of a supposed solution to solve every problem doesn't mean it's not a solution to a certain specific one. So I just really do not understand it and see the offside as an irrelevance. That's a different issue. If you've got a hole in your roof and your front door's hanging off, you don't not fix the front door because you've got a hole in the roof. They're just completely different issues, and I do not understand why we're still talking about it.
Take that, Ollie K. Right, moving on to the quarterfinal. Actually, no, before we do that, a word on France. Now, you guys were all there, so you didn't see this Sweden-France game. I did, because I had the benefit of two television sets. France were absolutely horrible against Sweden. Zlatan scored a tremendous goal, which I'm sure you've all seen, and which for me is hands down the goal of the tournament thus far. And by the way, we've all sort of submitted online our nominations for goal of the tournament, game of the tournament, and so on. So please check it out. It's up on the website. Ollie, does it look to you like France are getting worse as the tournament progresses?
Yeah, well, I mean, not necessarily, because the performance against Ukraine was the high point, and that was the second game. So I think they were better against Ukraine than they were against England, and then they've dropped sort of three levels since then, and that's got to be a concern for Laurent Blanc. I would say that although Italy is far from an easy game for England, I would say that France would be kicking themselves about ending up playing Spain rather than Italy, because they had the opportunity to win the group. It was theirs for the taking going into last night's games, and to surrender that winning position in the group and end up playing the world and European champions, well, it's the kind of thing England have normally done. So I'm very pleased that England have got Italy rather than Spain, although I'd rather it was say Greece or Ireland rather than Italy.
Well, thanks for that. Hughes, you're on board with it. Yeah, Italy, a better opponent than Spain, I imagine. But I saw this amazing statistic that's been doing the round, that England haven't actually beaten, and I realize it's subjective here, but a quote-unquote sort of major nation outside of English soil since unless you consider Belgium in 1990 to be a major nation, and even that was with David Platt's remarkable goal. And even if you really want to go back to 66 and stuff, you know, Argentines would probably complain about the refereeing, and the Germans, of course, still complain to this day about that goal in the final, which leaves rather slim pickings. Now, I'm generally a believer that what happened before is completely irrelevant and doesn't mean anything, but do you agree with me on this one, or is England's frankly atrocious record in knockout games against good teams, does that come into play at all?
I think it does, because a lot of the players, well, not a lot, but a handful of the players who were playing against Italy were there in Bloemfontein 2 years ago, the last time England were facing a major nation in a knockout game, and they were frankly terrible. So there must be some residual psychological effect. Although it is an amazing statistic, I think it's just a telling statistic, and it kind of gives the lie to all the sort of hype and hoo-ha we hear about England, and it shows how frankly average England are and have been, and the fact that this talk of winning trophies is blown up, but we've never got anywhere near.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax
think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Since 1990, and even then they required quite a lot of luck to get to the semi-finals. I think it is telling, and I think it actually shows the extent of the task that faces them on Sunday. It's a sort of new emerging Italy team who had their own problems 2 years ago in South Africa, but they've still got players with more experience and success in international football, several World Cup winners, so you'd have to make them favourites, and England will do very well to beat them.
Before we move on to the other quarter finalists, let's talk a little bit about the tournament as a whole. I mean, both host nations, Ukraine and Poland, are out. We've talked about how, you know, sometimes it can kind of deflate the tournament. We've also talked about what a fantastic tournament it's been. Ollie, do you have any theories about why this tournament has been so entertaining, so good thus far? Or is it just randomness and chance?
I think the Euros is always good. I think if you go back to you look at the last four European Championships, 2000, 2004, 8, 12, they've always been very entertaining, memorable games. And I know in England we're more likely to hark back to 96 and say that was a great tournament, but I think across Europe people would look at the last four, starting in Belgium and Holland in 2000, say that the quality is always high. There's an intensity to the competition because, you know, generally the teams that are there are of high quality and high ambition, and there's no let up. You can't really let your standards drop, and I think that's the reason why the tournaments tend to be so good. Perhaps unlike the World Cup, where you've got a bit of deadwood at the group stage, and it's why I just cannot understand the expansion to 24 teams. But I think that's probably a debate for another day.
That is a debate for another day. I don't know if personally I'd include 2004 as being that fantastic a tournament. Although I did enjoy the fact that rather than staying in a hotel or an ugly flat, we rented a villa with a pool, and I spent most of my day out in the pool in the sunlight. But Hughesy, do you have a clever theory why this particular tournament has been better, not just relative to the World Cup, but if you do think it was better compared to 08 and 04?
Well, I rarely have any clever theories, and I certainly don't on this occasion, but I do have a fairly obvious answer, I'm afraid. There's just lots of very good, well-balanced teams, which is made for competitive and compelling football. I also think the draw has helped the competition in that even the weakest groups, probably Group A, the teams are pretty well matched. It's made it very competitive. And other than the Republic of Ireland, there haven't really been, and Sweden, I guess, there aren't really any also-rans. And they were the only two teams who went into the last round of matches without a chance of getting through, which is why every game has mattered. And even Ireland-Italy had something on it because Italy had to win. So it's sort of a combination of good, well-matched teams playing each other and sort of recent trends for attacking football, which can be welcomed.
That's right. Italy had to win. And, of course, had Spain simply allowed Croatia to score an equaliser, y'all would be playing Croatia right now rather than Italy. Although, given your history against Croatia, you might have preferred to be playing Italy than the Croats. But I digress. Moving on, a very quick word first, actually, just because I am in the host chair, about this business with the fines and the underpants. You may have heard that Nicholas Bentner was fined 100,000 euros for illegally advertising a bookmaker on his underpants, whereas the Croatian FA were fined 80,000 euros for the fact that some of their fans racially abused Mario Balotelli. Now, Ollie, if I want to make if I could make a brief digression here, and feel free to disagree, but all these people tweeted out how absurd it is that, you know, racism is taken less seriously than sponsors and whatnot. But it seems to me there's one pretty obvious point, which is that Nicholas Bentner is being punished because he did something he wasn't supposed to do, and he did it for money. The Croatian FA, they're not the ones who were racially abusing Mario Balotelli. It was their fans. And the reason we punish FAs is that we expect them to exercise some level of control over their fans. But that said, given that they're in a foreign country with a foreign police force, would it not be better to just focus our efforts in finding the fans who are doing this and punishing them, perhaps even putting them in prison for a short while, rather than just launching greater and greater fines towards FAs who, frankly, when they're away from home, there probably isn't too much they can do to stop this?
Yeah, well, I would certainly rather that it was the individual, even if it's a standload of individuals. I would rather it was the individuals that were punished than the FAs. But there is an undeniable sort of discrepancy or problem with UEFA and FIFA handing out very, very small fines. And I know you talk about for racism, I know you talk about the responsibility aspect of it, but I think FAs have more responsibility to do more than they've done. I think if you look at the FA down the years, I think there have been times when they've been, when it suited their agenda to be in denial about hooliganism problems and racism problems in the past. And I think they have worked incredibly, incredibly hard to sort of root out these issues. And maybe, you know, some of the other countries are sort of at a comparable stage now to what the FA were previously. And there should be more of a sort of educational aspect to any punishment rather than just, you know, the sort of token fine, because I think a lot of these examples, and you could say it as the Luis Suarez issue, people end up not knowing quite what they've done wrong or deemed to have done wrong. So I think that's an issue, whereas I think the Bentner issue, I think he knows exactly what he'd done wrong, and then I think the bookmaker concerned is milking it for its worth.
Let's quickly look at the other three quarterfinals. Should be pretty straightforward, but I want to start with you, Husey. Greece and Germany in the bag from the Germans, I would assume, but do you want to say something nice about the Greeks?
Well, they've done well to get this far, haven't they, having gone down in their first game, had a man sent off, so they've fought back very, very well. You've got to fancy Germany there. They've been the most impressive team in the tournament so far, really. They're defending consistently, they're playing great football, and Gomez has started scoring goals, so you think they would win pretty comfortably and set up a mouth-watering semi against England or Italy.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that one. Ollie, I trust you don't disagree with Hughes's prediction. Germany to advance to the semis, right?
Yeah, I'd say Germany, without hesitation.
Good, which brings us to Portugal and the Czech Republic. Now, some of you, of course, will have, by the time you listen to this, this game may have already have taken place. Ollie, your assessment, your favourite?
This brings back great nostalgia to me because I went to the equivalent quarterfinal in Euro 96 at Villa Park, and it was an outrageous £45 to get in, which hurt me very much as a penniless student. And it was a dire game, briefly illuminated by the Poborski scoops goal. So I hope this is a much better game. I would say that looking at the players, looking at the team, I would regard Portugal as strong favourites in that they have the outstanding player in Ronaldo, and I would think he's, after his two goals against Holland, I would think he's in the mood to sort of propel Portugal into the semi-finals.
Cristiano to best Czech, and the Czechs, you and thereby cueing all sorts of stupid headlines about Czechs bounced out and whatnot. You on board with that, Husey?
Yeah, it's hard to disagree. I saw the Czechs' first game against Russia when they were battered 4-1, could have been 8, and they were very, very poor. So, to be honest, I'm surprised they're still here. In contrast, Portugal have got better in every game so far, and to beat Denmark and Holland, they've done very, very well. So I think that they should go through, particularly now Ronaldo is found some form.
And finally, Spain and France. If you haven't done so already, I invite you to go online and check out Rory K. Smith's story on the death of Tiki Taka, real or alleged. He's got some stuff there from Vicente del Bosque and Slaven Bilic. Ollie, I don't think this is going to be close. I think Spain are going to tear them to shreds, personally. But are you with me?
I think it might be closer than that. I think France's front players are capable of doing something if they get the ball and if they're in the mood. I think a lot of the criticism of Spain so far has been a little misjudged and excessive because they've got 7 points from a difficult group, a harder group than England's. They've dominated most of the games. They were living dangerously for a while against Croatia, but they've got great players and they know how to use the ball. And I would say Spain. I would still say Spain are my favourites to win it. So I'm not going to tip France to knock them out. Sure.
Preach on, Brother K. Great minds think alike. Husey, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's rather boring, but I can't see past Spain, particularly when I look at the French centre-backs and how slow and ponderous they are. I don't think it'll be necessarily straightforward. I think Spain will create a lot of chances and probably struggle to convert them. I think they're missing David Villa, and Torres has shown glimpses, but he's still not. And I don't think he will ever be the player he was 4 years ago in this tournament. But Spain, they can score from anywhere, can't they? You saw the winning goal the other night against Croatia. It's fantastic chip over the top, and they're always going to have that in them. And I expect them to win the game and get through to the semis and probably onto the final.
By the way, Laurent Blanc, the France manager, and this might be something worth considering, given that he's being linked to half a dozen English clubs, deciding to take just 3 central defenders to the Euro in his 23-man squad, whereas most take 4 or even 5 centre-backs. And the result is what? That Philippe Mexis is suspended, meaning that Laurent Koscielny will be partnering Adil Rami at the back. Any more injuries or cards, and he has to move one of his central midfielders, either Yann Mvila or Alou Diarra, into the back. I think it's a miscalculation and idiocy of colossal proportions from a guy who's actually, I think, one of the cleverest men in football. That's all we've got time for this week. Thanks for listening. We're going to be back on Monday, where we'll be doing a nice post-mortem of all four quarterfinals. In the meantime, you can visit us at thetimes.co.uk. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter. Matt Hughes especially enjoys it when you go and abuse him after he tweets out his ratings after every England game. And, of course, you can download our iPad app. It's pretty much like a newspaper, but it's got all sorts of fancy whistles and bells, and definitely worth checking out. Till next time, bye-bye.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.